I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Final hour of Grant and Danny. Kicking off, as always, with the big one at 1. And today, that's a conversation about the suddenly reeling Nationals who have dropped 6 of 8 and they're scuffling at the plate after being shut out last night. The race for a Red October is on the fan, presented by PVI Office Furniture. Fast, excellent, affordable. Business grows with PVI. Visit their showroom in Frederick, Maryland, or online at PVI.com today. Let's go to the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. Welcome onto the show. Friend of the program, long time, many time, our guy Mike Farron, MLB Network Radio, who is also heavily involved in broadcasting pre, post, and games for the Arizona Diamondbacks. So I figured who better to talk to about the NL wildcard right now than him. Mike, why don't we just start with your take on the Nats? They're taking on a little bit of water here. 6 of their last 8 have been lost, but they're still up 2.5 on the field. How should we be feeling about their chances in D.C.?
Well, I mean, I think you still have to be feeling pretty good because they're in the driver's seat. You know, the Cubs can't seem to get out of their own way. That helps. You know, Milwaukee is, you know, while they're within a game of Chicago now, they had a significant loss yesterday with Christian Yelich fracturing his kneecap, and the reigning MVP and likely one of the top two finishers this year in it will be lost for the remainder of the season. So that's that gives you a little bit more cushion. And, you know, while the Diamondbacks have been playing better, they've now dropped 3 straight. I mean, I think you guys have a pretty good idea of what both the pros and cons that the Mets and the Phillies are. So, you know, I would say overall it's okay. Things are okay. But, boy, is their schedule really tough down the stretch? And I think of all the teams that are in the mix, and I would say for both the wild card spots and for the National League Central, their schedule is the toughest by far. They're only playing contenders from here to the end of the year. St. Louis has the second hardest after this series with Colorado. They're playing all contenders the rest of the way. And then you start getting to, you know, the Phillies and the Mets have tougher ones because they're playing within the division. The Cubs is a little bit easier than that. And then the Diamondbacks and Brewers have the easiest ones remaining. So they're going to have to win some games in here in order to hold those teams off. But I would say still with, you know, a 2-game lead over Chicago, say that with the fact that the Cubs have not been able to be consistent at all, should be a spot where they feel pretty good that they're going to end up with at least one of those spots.
So, Mike, let's assume division winners here for a second. Even though I'm with you on St. Louis, maybe if the Cubs reeled off a few in a row, they could catch it. But let's just say Dodgers, Braves, Cardinals. Who is the most dangerous team to them, non-Nationals division? So let's say Milwaukee gets going, Arizona, which finally lost for the first time in a million years, it feels like, the other day. Philadelphia, if they could get out. Who's the most dangerous team to those big three?
That's a good question. I mean, outside of Washington, I mean, I would say probably the Cubs, just because they're the most talented of the groups, of the teams. But, you know, again, I mean, they're one of those teams that, despite all of their talent, has just not been able to play consistently good baseball. And they're doing it now without, you know, their best player in Javier Baez, who is, you know, probably done for the regular season because of a thumb injury. They've got Nico Horner, who was a first-round draft pick last year, playing shortstop out of necessity. Chris Bryant had a cortisone shot in his knee, and it paid dividends last night. He homered twice, but I'm not sure he's going to be in the lineup every day. And, you know, who knows how long before that knee starts being balky on him again. So I would say that they're probably the one that is the toughest out of that group. But, you know, you get into a 5-game series, the Mets pitching could carry the day, at least their starters could. You know, their bullpen, Lugo's been really good. Justin Wilson's throwing the ball well down the stretch. So, you know, maybe them, but I don't know. I think there's a pretty clear delineation between who the best teams in the league are with you know, Los Angeles and Atlanta. But that said, anything can happen in a 5 or 7-game series, and it's not always the best team that wins playoff series.
Mike Farron on Grant and Danny here on 106.7 The Fan. six teams are within 5.5 for the wild card. You mentioned the Mets, and they're always capable of winning four in a row because of that rotation. But they are now behind basically four teams just to get to the playoffs. Would you still give them a chance? I always say how many teams you have to leapfrog is probably a bigger deal than how many games back you are. Are all those teams squarely in it still for you?
Yeah, I think they are. I mean, because I think it's really close. And I actually look at it a little different than you do. I don't think that there's any benefit in looking at it in terms of a table and these are the teams that you have to leapfrog. There's a finish line, and that's the number of wins that you need to get to. And I look at a pennant race more like a road race or a track race in that everybody is spread out on the track racing to the same line. Now, the problem is we don't know exactly what that number is going to be. We've got a pretty good idea. It'll probably be around 87 or 88 wins that would likely get you into that. But I look at it much more like that because, you know, you can only control the games that you have head-to-head. But we've seen plenty of times where teams are, you know, fifth in the pecking order like they might be right now. But when it's only 2.5 or 3 games, that table can turn instantly. I mean, look at Arizona's a great example, right? They go into Sunday. They were 1.5 games back. They were right there with all the momentum. And now they've got 3 teams between them and the Cubs. So, you know, it's I don't necessarily look at it that way, especially when it's that close. I think of it more as a foot race than I do you have to climb over these teams in the standings like you're climbing a ladder or climbing a mountain.
At @Mike_Farron on Twitter for our guest who joins us here on Grant and Danny. Mike, you had to take your entire fortune, your whole Scrooge McDuck money bin, every cent that you have to your name, all the titles.
Wait,
and
can
deeds.
I take Grant's? His pile is bigger.
Yeah, right.
No, we've heard about that Farron money. We know about that money. Where would you place your bet on who wins the World Series? Who's the favorite for you?
Probably Houston. I mean, I think that's the team that – I think they're the best team. I think they have the fewest question marks. I think their lineup is really good, even if Correa doesn't come back, and it does sound like he's going to be back. Their rotation, you know, with Verlander and Cole anchoring it, are very good. But Zach Greinke's going to be their third starter. that's a guy who was legitimately in the National League Cy Young mix before the Diamondbacks traded him. So, you know, I think they're in really good shape. They have a very good closer in Ozuna. Their bullpen is strong. They have a lot of different ways that they can match up against you. They can beat you offensively in a lot of different ways. They hit for power. They don't strike out. They get on base. The pitchers miss a ton of bats. I just think Houston is clearly ahead of everybody else in the pecking order.
Mike, I've known you for a while. I don't remember what our arguments and debates were when they implemented the second wild card, but I know a lot of people hated it. It's so fun. I don't know if those people still exist or if there's still people out there that say that the second wild card is evil still. But isn't this a blast? I mean, this is a good time for me.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think it's good in the sense that it keeps teams involved. I wonder how that idea of getting into a coin flip game impacted, you know, the amount of activity at the trade deadline, or has impacted the amount of activity at trade deadlines, and whether or not, you know, if you equate player movement to building excitement, whether or not that has done more, you know, good than harm in that regard. And I'm not opposed to the second wild card. I mean, I don't love that you're reducing 162 games to one game when there could be a wide disparity in the record of the two teams. But, you know, I think it's definitely great that it's kept all of these cities interested in baseball down the stretch. In the National League, it's like that. I think in the American League, it's really, you know, we probably have spent, even on our show, more time on the National League race because A, so many teams have been involved, and B, you know, Jim Duquette, my co-host, and I both cover National League teams. But like Oakland, Cleveland, Tampa Bay are all separated by 2 games for 2 spots in the AL, and those 3 teams are really good. Like, they're teams that aren't pushovers when they face the Astros or the Yankees or whoever it'll be that they end up facing with whoever wins that wild card game. So I think that there's, you know, compelling situations in both spots. And yeah, I mean, I'm all for more baseball and more people being excited in September because there's nothing quite like feeling your team has a chance to go to the postseason.
It's the best. Tampa, Oakland, Cleveland have won a combined 10 in a row now, and all are going to finish around 97 wins, and someone's not going to make the playoffs, which is crazy. Hey, last thing for me, it was so tough last night to see the injury to Christian Yelich. I'm curious, and it almost sounds crazy to even ask this, but Baez is so good defensively and so important to the Cubs, too. In a month-long sample, who's missed more? I mean, are either of those two teams going to be able to get by without one of those guys, do you think?
It's a good question, I think, because I hear where you're coming from on that. And I do think that there is something to Baez's defensive impact there. But I also think that the schedule is going to play a fairly big factor. And if you look at the Brewers' schedule, they have three games left against the Cardinals, and that's it. Like, they've got two more in Miami. They've got Colorado, Pittsburgh, who, you know, showing more fight amongst themselves than they are against other teams. Cincinnati. Like, it's pretty soft. I mean, you know, the Diamondbacks' schedule is a little bit tougher just in the fact that they still have two games left in New York against the Mets this week. But, like, the Brewers' schedule is pretty soft, and if you're going to get by without Christian Yelich, you might be able to do it. And the Cubs, well, they're not playing a whole ton of good teams. They play the Cardinals seven times in the last 10 days of the season. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, I think it's tough to say. I think this is one of those spots where the schedule probably favors Milwaukee, and for that reason, they might be able to get going. The other thing is, like, if Trevor Bauer could get hot for the first time this year, not that he replaces Christian Yelich, but he could soak up a fair amount of that production for Milwaukee, and I think that would be a big, big bonus for them if they could get him going in the right direction.
Mike, really appreciate it. And when you talk to Jim Duquette next, tell him we said whatever, all right? Don't make it sound like we're desperate and we really wanted to say hi. Just be like the great Danny said, whatever. Deal?
Whatever?
Perfect.
Okay, that's fine. That's what I say to him most days anyway.
Very dismissive. That's what we want.
Thank you, Mike. We'll chat soon, man.
All right, guys. Be good.
See you, buddy. Well, there's Mike Farron. Of course, he calls some Diamondbacks games. He does their pre and post, but nationally hosts with Duke on MLB Network Radio. Next on Grant and Danny, Bill Belichick has spoken today about Antonio Brown. We'll tell you what he said. Also, something wacky happened here at the 106.7 The Fan headquarters.
Exceptionally wacky.
We will tell you that story next.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
He's Danny, I'm Grant. This is The Fan. We've got tickets to see the Nationals take on Bryce Harper and the Phillies. We'll be giving away at 1:45 in 25 minutes. You got to be listening, and if you are, you can win a pair of tickets coming up at the end of the show. So it just so happens, because you and I are on similar schedules during the day.
Sure.
We're on air at the same time.
Here we are.
Generally, we're at commercial at the same time. You know what, with us doing a show together.
You know, that's how it goes.
That occasionally we cross paths in the kitchen, heating up our food, or in the bathroom. Whatever we got to do, we got to do it at the same time.
You got a short window. A window.
So I walk into the bathroom, and there's Danny Hughey, and he's standing there, and I said, I don't even remember what I asked you. I asked you some question. And as we're standing there, I asked you a question, and it was not an important question. And as you were about to answer the question, someone in the stall very quietly answers the question.
Let me put that little red line under the word and autocorrect one small thing. I was in the middle of answering the question.
Right.
But the voice from the stall chimed in over my response.
Right.
I was pondering, Christian, pondering your question, going, well, the actual answer, if you think about it, before I could actually give the final answer to Regis Philbin, the voice lobbed like a grenade over the door stall.
I turned around and kind of peeked through the crack, and there was no one in the urinal behind, or the stall behind me. So basically, like, the two urinals are at the end of the bathroom.
Yep.
And there's a stall directly behind them, a bigger stall, handicap type
stall.
There's
the Jordan stall.
And that's not where they were. They weren't in the Mark stall. So they had to be kind of down either the next couple to the right. So they were, I don't want to say they were shouting, but to be heard by us, they were talking loudly as they were sitting in the stall going to the bathroom. And they answered my question to you as if they were in the middle of the conversation. Can you imagine the comfort? When I'm in the stall and two people come into the bathroom, I pull my feet back so no one can see my shoes.
All operations.
I don't want anyone to know, oh, those are Grant's shoes. He must be going to the bathroom right now. I pull my shoes back so that they're like up against the toilet, or I pull them away into like an area where no one can see them. I'm like contorted my body in a weird way now. I won't make a peep. I mean, my phone is already on silent, but I might even just kill it for the moment and just set it to the side. And I just sit there like a bad guy's rummaging through my valuables in my room, and I'm laying under the bed until someone leaves the bathroom.
You're the girl on the phone with Liam Neeson.
I'm on the phone with 911, basically. Yeah. And I'm hoping you can't hear my heavy breathing.
No,
I am.
They're going to take you.
Silence. Your boy makes no noise.
Of course you don't. You're a human being.
And if I found out that you knew I was in there, I'd be mortified.
Mortified.
Even you or Thom. Like, if you and Thom walk in after the show talking, I will hide.
Think now, you guys know my appointment schedule. You know how this disgusting, flabby, gross 40-year-old body works. I'm embarrassed every time when you guys come in and know that it's me. Even though outside the bathroom, you guys know that I know that you know that you know.
Well,
it's all fine.
And I try to make it even worse because occasionally, and Thom will do the same, we'll just go, hey, Danny.
Hi, Danny.
And we won't even look. We won't even know you're. We just, it's 2:10.
You know.
So
yeah.
You're clearly
so you know.
There. You have to be there. Where else could you possibly be?
Where is the shame? Okay? We were given the gift of shame all the way back in the beginning of the dawn times where the first fig leaf went over the junk. Where is the shame? If it wasn't a question being answered, it'd be a loud YouTube video or some other kind of song or different thing. Just sit quietly and stew in your own private shame stall. That's what everyone should be doing. The unbelievable comfort. First of all, put aside the idea that, let's say, hypothetically speaking, that the gentleman in question, it is the men's room after all, was not in the Eric stall. Let's say he was washing his hands. That's not your conversation. What are you doing answering a question that's not your conversation?
That's true.
You add in the compound layer of you are lobbing a verbal grenade from inside the stall where you are engaging in mortar fire with the porcelain. And
Correct. You're going to
pause that operation and chime in on a question that you were not asked?
You had nothing to do with the discussion.
Good Lord.
If you and I are in the kitchen heating up our lunches and someone's sitting at the table in a common area, even where these barriers of who's talking to who are broken down more than any other place in the building.
It is a common area.
Nobody would do that.
No.
Nobody would just interject into someone else's A-B conversation. They would probably see their way out. That's what the kids say, right?
A couple people, I say, would, and they're dealt with appropriately.
Like, inappropriately so.
Like they are qualified among us socially where they belong, if that makes any sense.
So you
put them in a compartment.
I have a guess as to who said it.
Did you? Do you really? I didn't.
Remember who I told you, I think it was.
You said that, and I went, oh, I don't know.
Sounded like that person.
I don't know.
I will know for sure in short order.
Because you're going to go check the footwear.
Well,
that's what you're going to do, aren't you?
I saw the footwear. I will be checking footwear.
I might walk around after the show and look at footwear.
Did you see the footwear?
I did. I got
What'd
a really good
see?
Glimpse. I saw sneakers.
No, you're wrong.
I saw sneakers.
There were not sneakers. Brown dress shoes. They were brown shoes.
Are you saying that there were two deucers? Because
no.
I absolutely saw sneakers.
Well, the person that spoke from the middle stall was in brown shoes. Positive.
Hmm.
Put it in Sharpie.
This is why eyewitness reports are not always credible.
I'm telling you.
I was traumatized by the event. My adrenaline was running high.
I would bet my life. I would sleep soundly knowing I didn't put the wrong person away. You know what I mean? I saw that person.
Wow.
I saw those shoes. But just imagine the comfort. I always say, you're on your phone, and I can hear that you're playing a game or that, you know, someone is watching a video. Like, that, to me, is preposterous.
It's so abhorrent. It's just wrong.
This is so much worse than that.
Like, this is wrong. And, it's like, oh, my God, can you imagine? It's so funny. No, this is wrong. Stop. You need to understand that your unbearable level of comfort that imposes on other people and makes it awkward is just not okay. This is like a life thing, right? Where you just assume everyone's fine with your kid, with your dog, with your whatever, your deal. Like, you're smoking and you can't believe that people are annoyed by it, right? It's the same thing. The self, sit in there and be quiet. We all have to go through it. It's biology. Just live in it for a little while and let the rest of us go about our day.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. Couple of news and notes from Redskins Park for you next. Also, what Belichick said about Antonio Brown when asked about the wide receiver publicly for the first time since the allegations came out yesterday of rape and sexual assault against the malign wideout that just signed with New England. Grant and Danny on the Fan.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
If you thought Bill Belichick and the Patriots would answer any questions about Antonio Brown today, you thought wrong. When asked about the Brown rape and sexual assault allegations, Belichick said he's not going to expand on the statement that the team had already given. He did confirm, and I don't know if he did it at the podium or otherwise, but the Patriots have confirmed that they did not know about Antonio Brown's pending allegation when they agreed to terms with him. So they signed him on Saturday, and the news came out yesterday, and apparently they had no idea that it was coming. Ian Rappaport of NFL Network has added that the league had no idea that this was coming before yesterday. But Belichick, I'm not going to be expanding on statements that have already been given. And the statement was exactly what you would have anticipated. The Patriots take this seriously. The Patriots would not employ someone who did something like this. We'll let the league look into the matter. Here's my question to you, Danny. Does Antonio Brown play on Sunday?
I'm going to guess he plays this Sunday while the investigation is ongoing. Right? It's like one of those, while you appeal something, you get to play until the appeal is resolved. Unless they want to say, hey, the gravity of this one is such a big deal, we'll put you on the exempt list. And I'm not sure all the procedural moves that are allowed there, but if I had to guess, I would guess that he plays this Sunday with, you know, kind of the way, remember how it worked for Ezekiel Elliott? You know, when they were still doing this investigation that just dragged and dragged and dragged and dragged. He played in the interim, then they finally suspended him for that series of games. I'd imagine he plays this weekend. But I would not be surprised if because of the exceptional nature of this, put him on the exempt list.
Is it worth taking the bite here? I mean, I don't know that if I'm the Patriots, I don't need him this weekend. I can look heroic and I can look good in the court of public opinion, which, by the way, I don't think they care about at all. I think Belichick gives zero you-know-whats about the public or about anybody other than himself and the Patriots and trying to win football games. But they don't need Antonio Brown. Without him this weekend, if they take the stand, we are about ethics and morals in New England, and we will not let him play until we find out what happened. By the way, you don't have to convict him of anything. You don't have to say that he did anything wrong.
Mm-hmm.
All you're doing is just playing it cool and saying,
we take this very seriously.
Yes, this is something we don't tolerate or abide, and we just brought this guy in. We don't know him from a hole in the wall yet as a human being. We've never been around him before other than at Pro Bowls. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to do some research. a la the Redskins and Reuben Foster. Remember, they got skewered for not digging into everything with him.
Mm-hmm.
We're just going to take our time and make sure everything comes back on the up and up. In the meantime, you go out and you beat the Dolphins without him by 17 points.
Yeah, you know what it reminds me of? This is obviously far less serious, but reminded me of at Ohio State. Remember Terrell Pryor and all those different things? Jim Trussell, like, we take this incredibly seriously. We're going to send a message, but not for the bowl game. It's going to be next year against Kent State. He's got to sit out. Right? You know, okay, that's a real big punishment. He's got to sit out against the team you're going to beat by 50. So this would be the time to do it. You're facing a 1AA school in the terms of Miami, right? You're going to beat the sun out of them. Even though, by the way, they're weird in Miami. Normally the Patriots are. They don't cover. They lose sometimes. It's the weird place for them. I think that all goes away because of how bad Miami truly is this year.
Now, I do not think the Patriots should cut Antonio Brown outright. I know a lot of people right away were calling for his release last night and kind of celebrating that there was another story that came out. And as someone who has led with my pom-poms all of the Antonio Brown celebrations as he's been a knucklehead every step of the way with the Raiders, I'm not doing that this time. I think this is way too grave a situation. This is way too big a deal. This is different than him Instagramming comments from his head coach.
Yeah, this is not posting a fine letter on Instagram.
So I'm not advocating or condoning that the Patriots should release this guy. We've talked about this in the past. I think we're going on a really reckless path, and we're driving real fast down that path if you just outright get rid of this dude because someone came out with an allegation against him before you know exactly what happened, before you know if the allegations are true and founded or not. We've had allegations against players get walked back. We've had so many of these sagas that end, whether it's Elliott or a Reuben Foster in different ways that we have no idea. The allegation itself is just that. And I certainly hope none of this happened. And I think it takes a lot of courage one way or the other for this woman to come out and use her name and give the text messages or whatever that was, the screen grab she had.
Mm-hmm.
It's already, she's in a bad spot. He's in a bad spot.
There are no winners here.
Everybody loses. I do think, though, we just need to wait and see. Let's slow our roll. But that doesn't mean you have to play in the meantime. At most companies, while they're doing their due diligence and their research, you're not just churning out content. You're not just doing your normal Wednesday.
That is a good point. My only counter is that it's not as if the regular workday in the NFL is a comp to ours.
I'm not saying
there's so few windows to contribute that I'd hate the precedent. Again, and we're sitting here, we're talking about the 95,000th permutation. The most important thing is what you said a moment ago. I want to echo that.
Right, but sports show, but football, sure. Game Sunday, does he play?
Yeah, so but the thousandth layer in terms of import is I would hate the precedent to be set of accusation flies, guy automatically can't play, regardless of how authentic the accusation is. Now, this one, again, there's some credibility to it. It's worth investigating, and I think we go down that road. I imagine we'll have a case-by-case basis. So there's a part of me that says, you put this in place in terms of the CBA or in terms of the commissioner's office where you go, either you can play or you can't play, whatever rule you want to go. I would default towards you can play while you're being investigated or accused of something. That's just how I'm wired. And then if you're guilty of whatever the accusation is or if we find wrongdoing, the suspension can get kicked in any time. Because if you're not suspended and you're not playing, that doesn't sit as well with me. Now, again, I know it's not as important as the actual incident in question, but just the general idea of you're going to have playing time taken away from you if it turns out you didn't do anything, that to me is the double whammy. Yeah?
Drew Rosenhaus was back on ESPN today, by the way.
A lot of Drew Rosenhaus.
So much FaceTime for him. I mean, he has been all over the place. He's not turning down any interviews. Antonio Brown, the latest, did practice today with the Patriots, his first practice this afternoon. His former trainer, who came out with the allegations, is apparently going to be meeting with the NFL. Belichick declined to comment. As I said, we're working on Miami, was his comment. You agree with me, though, that Belichick, more than almost any other, you can't even just call him a head coach. He's really the GM and kind of the team
president.
He's
the everything.
More than anyone else running an NFL team, Belichick, I think, cares less about what everybody thinks. It seems like.
I agree with that.
If it wasn't the Patriots, can you imagine the blowback any other team would have gotten if they went and got Antonio Brown a couple hours after the Raiders released him?
Yeah, agreed.
But I mean, Bill Belichick, just doesn't care.
Well, and he's also earned one of the things I say all the time, and this, again, it goes to the trivial matter of like whether a coach goes for it on fourth down or runs certain things or tries outside the box thinking, is I think the majority of coaches are afraid of the press conference. They're afraid of the hive groupthink of the NFL in the form of a question coming up and beating them down. You think differently? How dare you? Smash mouth, establish the run. You know, I think they're afraid to think outside the box. That time is changing, but it's not changing that fast. Belichick's immune to that. You put up a million Super Bowls, you go to 9 AFC title games in a row, whatever the hell else it is, you have no hesitation in cutting somebody that doesn't get along with your program. You bench a guy because he didn't come to OTAs, or you know, their flight got delayed because of a giant hurricane or a monsoon. That's the culture. They've established it. He does not care. He's the most not caring in regards to public opinion coach in the NFL right now. You know what I mean? He probably took the mantle over for Bill Parcells, his rabbi.
It's Wednesday. Patriots have drama to deal with. They're 1-0. So do the Redskins. They are 0-1, although they have put to bed for now the running back discussion. Sorted itself out, it sounds like, with Darius Geis unlikely to be able to go against the Cowboys. Jay Gruden will speak in about 1 hour, and you will hear from him here on The Fan. Will he rule Geis out? We're going to find out coming up later today, but it sounds like Adrian Peterson's going to carry the load. What about Trent Williams, though? There were reports at the end of last week that he was going to show back up early this week. Vernon Davis told us earlier today when he was on the show that Trent Williams has not come to the facility today. Looks like no Trent for week two. We'll look ahead to the Cowboys, and we'll set the table for the Nats as they have an interleague game in Minnesota again tonight. Next on The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
7 NFL coaches made their debuts this weekend. Only one, going back to Thursday, Matt LaFleur is 1-0. And LaFleur, frankly, didn't have all that impressive a first ever game with the Packers as an offensive coach and play caller. Their offense left a lot to be desired.
Yeah, Chicago scores a touchdown. The discussion this week is what's wrong with Aaron Rodgers. You know, like we usually have early on in the season, or we've had over the course of these years. And he ends up putting up great numbers because he's one of the best to ever do it. But that would be the narrative, certainly, after 1 week with Green Bay. Couldn't manage much.
They scored 10 points, and they won because of a dominant defensive performance led by their coordinator, Mike Pettine. But the other 6 coaches that coached in their first game, Zach Taylor with the Bengals. Cincinnati almost beat Seattle. They actually played hard. And
I was impressed with them.
Andy Dalton looked great. So I think for Zach Taylor, you feel pretty good about his first game. Adam Gase's Jets were up 16-0 and lost 17-16 to a Bills team that isn't a playoff contender, you wouldn't think, on paper. Now, Gase did previously coach with the Miami Dolphins, but this was his first game there.
Mm-hmm.
That's as bad a first game as there is for a guy coming over. There are people that pick them as a sleeper to win 8 or 9 games.
I am not one of those people, but yeah, that was not inspiring if you're a Jets fan.
Cliff Kingsbury, coaching the Arizona Cardinals, tied the Detroit Lions. And you give his team credit, his air raid offense was grounded and inept for about, I would say, 2.5 quarters. Kyler Murray in the first half of that game looked lost. He was not good. And then that offense started clicking. Murray started making plays, a little schoolyard ball, drawing some things up in the dirt, and they came back to tie the Lions, went to overtime in that game. So Kingsbury, I don't know if you chalk that up as a good or bad debut, but I really liked the end of that game for the Cardinals.
It's hard to quantify that because you're right. For really 3 quarters, they were dreadful. And that fourth quarter, finally, with a field goal drive, got going, and then they found whatever it was that they found, and Murray looked great.
He also made a couple of sharp decisions. I was watching that game, and Mark Schlereth was killing him for a decision to kick a field goal at one point. I think it made it like 24-9, maybe,
uh-huh.
or it was the first field goal, and it was still a two-possession game afterwards, and Schlereth's like, you can't do this. Why would you do this? You got to go for it. And it turned out he played it beautifully because they ended up tying the game at the end and getting the two-point conversion. And Schlereth basically said, my bad, he did it right. But he made a couple decisions that ended up working out really well. Then you've got Freddie Kitchens of the Browns.
Ooh.
This was my one concern about Cleveland. I have them 9-7 and a wild card team. They got a coach who's never been a coach before, who's barely been a coordinator before. A couple of years ago, he was a running backs coach bouncing around team to team. Freddie Kitchens is probably on a warmer seat. Not that he's in job trouble, but he's going to hear more scrutiny and more noise than anybody else this week because the Bengals, the Jets, the Cardinals, the Bucks, the Dolphins, those teams, it's not really a lot expected.
There's some expectations here.
In the case of LaFleur with the Packers and Kitchens with the Browns, people want to see you win right away, and the Browns didn't just lose. I mean, they looked unprepared and terrible.
Yeah, a lot of penalties too, some undisciplined stuff, guys getting kicked out of the game. My concern, I had a question about Kitchens. Can you wrangle all of these personalities? Because there are a lot of them. Okay, that's a challenge. But my concern was their offensive line, and I think that's going to be a concern. I had them, I think, 8-8 missing the postseason, but that first game was uninspiring. It's nothing is written yet. I think they'll rally. They'll be able to learn from that. It's a nice punch in the mouth to remind you you ain't special. You haven't arrived yet, and you got a lot of work to do. So maybe they take that, and that's a funny aberration at the end of the year. Remember how bad we were week one? Ha, 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 funny. Everyone wrote us off, and you could write that cool story about the season. But, man, it was not inspiring.
And then there's the Dolphins and Brian Flores.
Terrible.
The Dolphins, who got beat 59-10 by the Ravens.
Could have been worse.
The Dolphins, who look like they may not win a game based on how they played on Sunday. I don't want to make this in any way a referendum on him because I don't think that's fair. But I will just say I don't think I've seen an NFL team look that bad, but maybe count the number of times in my lifetime on one hand. And it's hard when it's the only game he's ever coached for to not say in some way that something wasn't right in their preparation. I know that they don't have talent. A lot of teams that don't have talent have played games before. I very rarely see a team look that embarrassing. And I'm telling you, if you've got NFL Game Pass like I do, get on NFL.com tonight and just go watch that game. The missed tackles and the lack of effort on some plays for week one was, to say the least, if you're a Dolphins fan, discouraging. I don't even know if you're a Dolphins fan. What conversations do you have on Miami radio this week? The season just started, and it's over. They are dead in the water.
They're cooked, yeah.
You go to Rosen right now, and you just keep your fingers crossed that he plays pretty well. And so, maybe that's one positive storyline.
So there have been individual moments where I've been more embarrassed, say, as a Redskins fan. Think like Swinging Gate. Think, you know, Monday Night Massacre. Think of, you know, I don't know, just a game where the team never showed up, just got destroyed at you know, Giant Stadium, or any of the other times where they gotten drubbed. I'm with you in that this didn't even look like that. You know what I mean? That was one of those are all days where, hey, they don't have it, or the team is quit on the coach for a season opener. And I know what they're doing. They're doing the smart thing, by the way. They've got all the picks next year and the year after. They have so many picks. They're doing exactly what I would want. They're being very upfront about it. But in the meantime, man, it's going to get ugly. It's not even just, hey, we don't have talent. I'm with you in the sense that, what are these guys doing? I'm very confused. They're faking a run. Like, it was like they'd never seen football before.
It's bad.
You know, I know there's a difference between talent and execution, and man, oh man.
They got to change something quick is what they got to do right now. They got to figure something out, or else not only will it not get better, but I mean, the Patriots are coming up next. The spread, when I last saw it last night, was 18.5. I'm tempted to take the Dolphins. Just because it's the NFL and 18.5 is too big.
And the Pats are weird down there in Miami, right?
They are, but the way that they played, they could lose by 30 or 40 again. That's not unreasonable at all. Nats tonight in Minnesota. Offensively, they got to get going. They haven't been scoring. They got shut out last night. Steven Strasburg is on the hill, Danny, and they need a good outing from Stras. But more importantly, they just got to get Wood on a baseball. Martin Perez, a lefty who has an ERA close to 5 this season, is on the mound for the Twins. This is a game where you need to find a way to score 6 or 7 runs. Stras is on the mound. That should be enough.
They need to do it. They need to swing the bats and kind of pass the torch like they were doing with that lineup 1 through 8. And now in the American League 1 through 9 just kind of makes it really difficult on pitching. I understand that other guys are good and they get paid to play too. But I'm not saying you got to score 9 runs a game like you did for basically a month plus where the offense was absolutely staggering and record-setting, but there's got to be happy medium. You got a way to grind some out. Rizzo talked about it this morning with the junkies. It's not always a 3-run homer. Sometimes it's manufacturing a run, moving guys up, moving them in. That's the way offenses start to get rolling a little bit.
Trey Turner has a big hit tonight. He gets going, and I think that makes a big difference. In honor of Trey, he's number 7. The 7th caller now at 800-636-1067 will win a pair of tickets to see the Nats take on the Braves this Saturday at Nationals Park. Be one of the first 20,000 fans, 21 years of age or up. And as you get into the game, you're going to take home a limited edition Oktoberfest Nats beer stein. Tickets are on sale now at nationals.com. This is courtesy of the Nats. Details at thefandc.com/contest. Thanks to Tommy and Brendan, as always, for their hard work. For Danny, I'm Grant saying so long. We're back at it tomorrow. The great John Clayton is on the show at 11 a.m.
The radio program has ended.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.